You guys have been all over the place, it seems. You were in Japan and Australia after coming in the U.S., and now you're coming back, and then you're going overseas again. How is that to deal with these days?
I'm getting better at napping. I think we all are. The jet lag shake is real. Just trying to make smart choices and be healthy out on the road.
How many guys are on the road these days? I know there's kind of a rotating group of musicians who come in and out as they're available because everybody's in demand because of their expertise and their talent.
We travel with like 9 to 11 on stage, typically. And then we have a crew that's like, I think, around six people, six to seven.
You've done some solo work, but you've been with this group for a very long time. As I recall, you came in about a year after Michael League formed Snarky Puppy. What drew you to join a group like this?
I think at that point in my life, we were younger, in our 20s and whatnot, you'd like kind of finding a community, especially like a creative community, like the members of Snarky and the various surrounding people that I was just attracted to. This, like, we had similar interests, listened to similar things and like to explore new music. And we're all like, you know, super serious about it, but it was like, you know, a nice crew of people. So that kind of initially drew my attraction to like just hang out with these people and become friends with them. When I moved to Denton, Texas, where we all kind of met. In Dallas area.
One of the things that strikes me about Snarky Puppy is it's kind of like the Wrecking Crew or the Funk Brothers from the old days, because you've got so many guys that are excellent musicians, and it's like you want to collaborate and work together. Is that what it really feels like when you're all in the same room recording something like Empire Central, which I think it was the video that I watched where everybody, there was three guitars and three drummers and a whole horn section and lots of keyboard synthesizer stuff. It was just an enormous room with an audience.
Yeah, well, thanks for that compliment. The Wrecking Crew, yeah, we all look up to those like musicians and things like that. And I feel like what's nice about the band, you talk about the amount of musicians that we have in our circle, but also just like the diversity, the various like things that they're like obsessed with musically and exploit, you know, and then we combine these things together. And I think that it's like a really nice, you know, exploratory kind of situation, the possibilities of sounds and rhythms, you know, that we draw upon from our influences and places we get to travel, you know, new music we encounter, things like that. It's super fun.
One of the things I found in talking with musicians a lot is that they listen to everything, trying to get ideas and think a little bit differently when they get together. Who have you listened to over the years that has really influenced what you're doing, and how have you been able to bring that from your perspective into Snarky Puppy?
I often like to think of music, there's like good music and bad music, and like, and try to get rid of like these like boxes that we like to put on things, like, you know, genres and various things. Cause so just seeking out the good stuff that speaks to you as a human being. And so like some of the things that I really like to listen to that I always find myself coming back to since like my youth is like, my first band I was ever obsessed with was the Beach Boys. And the Beach Boys, you know, like the orchestration of those, like, you know, some of those classic records, and all these different sounds kind of led me to find like a little bridge to like other styles of music as well. Like, you know, like grunge rock mixed with like some hip hop from my younger days. I still listen, like, you know, hang out with those. I consider some of these albums like, you know, long friends I've known for a long time. Like the last few years, I've been really like, I got super into Brazilian music, so much so that I went down and like stayed in Rio for 3 months. And just kind of hung out and just was like tried to be like a guinea pig, always carrying a horn on me and just go to check out the music and draw upon like that deep well of tradition and sounds. So yeah, that's kind of what's been into musically lately.
Well, we talked briefly about the Wrecking Crew, who were the musicians on the Beach Boys stuff.
Yeah, exactly, right? It is, full circle. It's hard to get away from it, right? Yeah.
And you mentioned the good music and bad music, and I have to tell you, my show is called Good Music, and it has been for a very long time. And on the nice. The listing for my show on the radio station's website, there's Duke Ellington. There's two kinds of music, good music and the other kind. I think we're tracking along the same lines here.
Nice. Sympathetic vibrations.
Yes. You've worked with a lot of different folks. It's interesting to see that, you know, names like David Crosby and Michael McDonald, Chris Thiele, who was just here a couple of weeks ago, and I spoke with him, I think it was last year or the year before when he came in during his solo thing, and then Los Angeles Philharmonic and fish. That's a pretty broad range of sounds, and I think that follows up with what you just said about your openness in hearing different sounds and wanting to work with different people. Can you talk about what it's like working with such a diverse and prestigious group of musicians?
With anything, it's just like trying to find a way to be show up and be prepared and be open to do the task at hand. I bring it back to like the years with Snarky, just because we've done various things and for years on the road, like we finish a gig, you're in a town, you like, is there a jam happening somewhere? Or there's like, where's the local community that's like gathering to share some music and seeking that out. And that's also like a big influence and like a nice place where you're like, you know, depending on what country you're in and what kind of music they like to play. And you're like, well, how do I fit into this? And how can we engage and communicate musically? So I think about those kind of experiences for sure.
And those famous after hours clubs in New York City, which of course never shuts down. After the Madison Square Garden show, they go to some jazz club someplace.
Yeah, the late night can be found anywhere, though. I think about places in Germany or in Brazil or Japan, like these memorable nights where we just had these really special moments with other musicians, and like we take that with us, you know, so it becomes part of our like, you know, wheelhouse, or whatever.
Because it's an ensemble of musicians, and I think I saw something someplace about, you know, it's a pop band, but without the vocalists. It's the way that I think Michael League described it at some point. You're playing very long songs in a lot of instances because everyone gets a turn as a solo. And when you're in the vibe, you want to continue it. What does the set list become for the guys that are in the touring band? Because you've got different components and, you know, you want to vary the sounds as well and represent the range of the musicians as well as Snarky Puppy.
Yeah, League usually sends those set lists out anywhere from like, you know, a couple hours before the gig or 5 to 10 minutes before the gig. But then our tour manager, Crook Stewart's riding them. He's like, because he prints them out. And he's like, Mike, you got to give me these set lists, dude. You know, a lot of times on tour, we'll have like a working batch of tunes that we're playing depending on the instrumentation and what's going to work best. And also, like, League's good about considering like the hall we're in. Like, what kind of room is it? Are we in like a rock room tonight? Are we in like a very like wet, lively, you know, like concert hall, and taking those things into consideration when like choosing the songs from any given night, you know, to just try to find a best way to put our foot forward. And also like moving solos around from tune to tune, just so people aren't just doing the same thing every time, just to keep it fresh and, you know, alive, breathing.
Now you're performing with reeds, you're on saxophone, flute, and clarinet. How do you get ready for varying what you're going to be doing with the tunes that you're playing, making a decision on which instrument is appropriate for whatever the set list is going to be?
Like any instrumentalist, you got to hang out with your instrument of choice and spend some time like on a daily basis and just like maintain the physical aspect of playing the instrument. For me, like anytime I'm off the road and I have a little bit of downtime, I usually like find those moments to like really dig into some music that I really love, like a record I've been wanting to check out or a song or things like that. And just kind of like hit myself with something new and something fresh just to keep creativity alive, you know? So I think a lot, and my fellow bandmates do that similar kind of thing, depending on what they play and where they're at and what's going on. But yeah, just trying to grab those moments when we can, we're not traveling. Cause oftentimes, you know, the music's like such a little part of the day. So much of the day is like getting from point A to B to C, and then making sure all your luggage is there and all these other factors. So the music is like a gift on the road, for sure.
You had your first solo album several years ago, Boomtown. It's really varied. There's some jazz, electronic music, hip-hop elements in there. You're writing as well, I know, composing. How do you translate that into what you want to do using your skills and surrounding yourself with musicians to make your compositions come to life?
I definitely have like leaned heavily, like thanks to the pandemic and so much free time, like, you know, like went deep on like the production side of things and like tried to like become better at learning how to like, okay, well, I listen to this record and I hear the piano was recorded in a certain way, or there's a certain kind of slapback delay on the vocals. Like, how can I recreate this and get the same kind of sound? So I've kind of like, you know, gone a little deeper into that over the past few years. And so just to create some independence sometimes, and just being able to like, you know, I hear some music in my head, I want to get that sound out, and finding a way to achieve that, you know, with some sort of ease, and just exploring like different textures, different combinations of things, trying to think like, you know, also just straight up stealing ideas from other musicians and then putting through my filters, which, so it becomes something fresh and different, you know, little techniques like that, I think.
Yeah, no new ideas, only good ideas. They keep repeating.
Yeah, it's a loop. Yeah. And I put out a second record in October of this past year called Radio Child. It's like a little bit deeper, fun album.
Yeah, it had drum machines, woodwinds, keyboards, synthesizers on it, as I recall.
Yeah, there's not a string instrument on the album. No guitars. No guitar love this time.
But I was also watching some of the videos on your site, and Late Night was So High video. It was kind of the illustrative, lots of lines changing around. Everybody seems to be flying. Did you have that as an idea as you were developing the music, or did you collaborate with an artist to say, okay, this is my music, and how do you think this would best visualize?
I had no idea about that when I was creating that, like writing that song and recording that and producing that music. No, I collaborated with three friends of mine that I met when I was living in Rio last year. There were some younger videographers and illustrators, and they have like a team, and they've started doing some music videos for some other like artists on Ground Up Music as well. But a really creative, just fun, collaborative experience just to try and find some visual aspects that represent the music, which is always subjective. But, you know, we had some themes that we worked out and worked on that video for like a month, and that's what I got. Thanks for checking it out.
Well, I try to do my homework on these things. And in listening to Cork Out and Boomtown and things on Radio Child, to my mind and my ear, it sounds like you're at times moving into more of almost a movie theme, background music, sonic kind of approach to how the listener is going to recognize and embrace your sound. Am I correct?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely like film composers. There's like, you know, got my favorites. But I like to check out their stuff from time to time. So that's definitely an influence for sure. Good ears.
On the show that you're going to be bringing to stores, what's likely to be heard for the audience?
I have no idea. We'll know like a little bit before, but you know, we've been playing a lot of the stuff from Empire Central ever since we released that. But we just did, you know, a week in Japan and in Australia, like you said, and we kind of dipped back into like some even older tunes we haven't played in a while, which is always fun to like revisit them and see what where they can go, because they're not going to be the same. We, you know, people, you know, we change different years, music grows.
Okay, I always ask this this question of folks that I talk with, and there's no correct answer, or maybe no answer at all. And that is, what is it that people should know about you and the band that they don't know, or they should know?
That's a tough question. They should know that they don't know. Well, I always just encourage people, like, you know, if they like Snarky Puppy, to like every single member of the band is involved in a lot of really cool creative projects that are oftentimes very different from Snarky Puppy. So like, these people love music and they want to get to know these musicians more. Go check out the back catalogs of everybody and like see what they're up to outside of just Snarky Puppy. And I think that'd be a good place to start. That's what I'd share.
And the other question is, what should people ask you that they don't about your music?
You know, I just think of music, it's like music is so subjective, and what from listener to listener, what people like and don't like changes. And just trying to like learn how to be open to some new things and accept like some music that might challenge you a little bit, you know, like one of our sound engineers, he's kind of new to the crew. His name is Ryan Haft, and he lives in Miami, really cool, creative musician, and has a studio in Miami. He's a good hang on the road, and he's got this thing he calls the crunch hour, where you sit down and you listen to like a record, whether you like it or not, from beginning to end, and see if you can make it all the way. And I've been trying to like be a little more open to do that, just to, you know, find some other things that you know might not always find. And so far it's been producing some results, so that's fun.
Obviously there's a collection of great musicians that you work with all the time. Is there someone that you have not yet worked with that you would like to work with?
Yeah, I mean, I think we all, as musicians, have our list. It's just like, you know, what's feasible, and setting yourself up to be in the same place, or finding like little connections here and there to collaborate and record, do things like that. So yeah, you know, if I'm in certain cities, like we're on the road, we're traveling, you know, knowing where certain musicians hang out and going to check out their gigs or a jam or things like that, you know. Just kind of just checking out the community around the music and the musicians you dig and want to collaborate with potentially.
But I didn't hear any names.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, yeah, I'll keep it to myself. Sorry.
That's okay. That's okay. I like asking the question.
Don't want to jinx anything. You know what I mean?
There's lots of folks on the road all the time, and there's always possibilities when you walk into a room with the case over your shoulder. You never know.
Yeah, it's nice to be open and ready at any given moment. Yeah, well, I appreciate you having me, and thanks for the you were talking about collaborative efforts amongst the Snarky crew. Because of like the byproduct of me going to live in Brazil, I invited Justin Stanton down, the keyboardist, trumpet player from Snarky. We had finished a South American run and had like 2 weeks in between our next tour. And I was going to Brazil to hang out. And I was like, Justin, why don't you come? And I think I have a studio hooked up. Let's just record some music with nothing really planned. And we went there and recorded a record last June that we just finished 2 weeks ago. It's going to be coming out in June, called Claro e Escuro. And it's like, you know, every day we had like a different band, basically, of like some of my favorite musicians I met around Rio. So look for that later this year.